thing.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's fire it up. All right, cool, man. Dude, thanks so much for jumping us on the pod today with us here at Tiger Table. We've got Jason Daniel from LSKD. And dude, I am extremely excited to just know more about your story. And you guys are popping off. Thanks for the gear, by the way. I feel dripped out.
No worries, you look fresh.
Yeah. Dude, the material.
Thanks for repping.
I don't know what you guys do with the materials, but I haven't felt materials like this before.
Yeah, we thank you. I mean, we are obsessed with fabric and fit for the athlete.
Yeah. I even noticed like these pants here because when I used to work at World Gym, I used to wear the Adidas pants.
Yep.
But they always felt kind of like cheap and like flimsy.
Yeah.
And I'd always end up stretching them. And yeah, this, you can just tell the quality is different, man.
We spent a lot of time, and I mean, our design and production team and Dylan, our head of design, it like, we're obsessed with fabric and fit and just testing with not only with our team, but with our athletes as well, and getting that feedback from the community.
Yeah.
So we do a lot of testing to make sure we just get that fit right. Mm. You know, that's our energy stretch. So it's almost developed so you can wear it every day, but you know, it's got that stretch in it that, you know, I've trained in them as well in our shorts, in the energy stretch shorts, which I'm wearing today. So you're wearing the long ones, I'm wearing the short ones.
So these are the same ones?
Same ones, yeah.
Short version of that.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And even the shirt fabric, because I used to work in a merch store.
Yep.
We sold a lot of AS Color. And I don't know if you've ever tried on a Gildan shirt.
Yes. That was our first t-shirts we made in 2007.
With Gildan?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was working as a carpenter and I was wearing Gildans. I'm like, oh, I'll Google that and they'll be our first ever t-shirts we make, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
But they're our flex cotton. So we develop our own fabric with this like four-way stretch. So it's like buttery soft, oversized fit. So you can almost train in it, but you can wear it every day.
That's what I like about it. It feels like it's kind of between the gym and like just everyday use, and the fabrics, they're just awesome, man.
Yeah, thanks. We're a bit obsessed.
Yeah. So if we're to take it back to the beginning, dude, because you were saying that you were a chippy.
Yeah.
And I know you kind of...
can't build much, but...
what kind of stuff were you doing as a chippy and how long were you doing it for?
So I was a carpenter. I finished school in 2003 and I became a carpenter around 2005. And I was building... So I started off doing stick frames. Anyone that's a carpenter knows what a stick frame is.
I have no idea what that is.
You lay the walls down and you put them together and then you get the nail gun and nail them off. So I started out doing that. And funny enough, my first year, my boss actually never let me use a nail gun. I was the guy that would lay the walls out and then someone else would come along, another apprentice, and he'd nail it together. But it actually taught me a lot of respect about and appreciating a framing gun, because obviously they're quite dangerous when you're shooting nails. And then I would do soffits, which is under the roofs, and fix outs, which is, you know, windows, architraves, the skirting. And so I kind of did that. It was a lot of new homes, but I did that for 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
While I was still trying to build the brand.
Okay. And then I guess, our team found this cool graphic, and this is the interesting thing about the history of your brand is like, we know LSKD and I've seen your stuff do popping off everywhere. I've seen it on Instagram. I'm seeing it, influencers and celebrities wearing your hats and wearing your merch and all the rest of it. And I had this impression before we had this conversation. I'm like, oh, this is like a new brand.
Yeah.
But when we were looking at it and having a conversation with you when we were at Simon Beard's party together, you were telling me the history of the brand. I was like, I didn't realize how long this brand had been around for it. Because originally it was called Loose Kit Industries. Then you rebranded in 2007 to LKI. But dude, take us back to the beginning. Like how did this whole thing start? Why did you start a brand?
Yeah, so I mean, I grew up riding BMX. I was 12, 13 years old. I rode with guys that were 18. So they're a lot older than me, but they were professional athletes. And one went off to win X Games.
Wow.
And I was trying to jump this big jump as a 12, 13 year old. And they were calling me the loose kid because I couldn't, you know, like I was a bit crazy. And
because you're so young, you're doing something so gnarly.
Yeah, and I was
the
kid. I was the youngest riding with these athletes. And that's where it kind of all started. And, you know, I was obsessed with action sports my whole life, you know, and riding BMX. I always wanted to race motocross. And to be honest, the brand started as a high school nickname and it evolved into a brand from just a bunch of friends telling me I should turn it into something. So from around 2002 to 2007, there was this period of time where we made hats and like to the point I actually, you know, where we met in Surfers Paradise, there used to be a shop under there that I bought. I used to go buy around 50 hats at a time. It was like $3 for $5, these trucker hats, and I'd print the Loose Kid logo on it.
Yeah.
And then I'd sell them to people at the motorbike tracks and just really grassroots early days learning how to build the brand.
Because I remember BMX kids wearing your stuff when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Because I went to Mountain Creek High School on the Sunshine Coast.
Yep.
and the skate park at Alexandra Headlands. I don't know if you've ever been there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was my stomping ground because I used to do BMX.
Yeah.
I was a BMX kid, but I was never really good. I like building dirt jumps and stuff like that with my friends. But I remember seeing the brand floating around, the Loose Kid brand.
Yeah.
Occasionally, yeah.
So yeah. Then, yeah, it was that. And we just made a lot of stickers and a bunch of clothes, but I'd never really had committed. So it was just, we've got this brand. We were setting up at the motocross track because I'd got into racing moto by then and stopped riding BMX. And we'd set up a little pop-up tent and there'd be 500 athletes. So, you know, there's probably 2,000 people there in total. So a big community, which is part of what we do within fitness communities today.
Mm.
And, you know, I always thought it could be something, but it was 2007. I was at a carpenter and I thought, you know what, I want to turn this into my career. And the logo evolved in from Loose Kid Industries to LKI.
Mm.
And when it had evolved to LKI, that's when I knuckled down. And I was, you know, working at, you know, you get up at 4 or 5 a.m., you'd work, then I'd go to the job site at 6:30. My lunch break, I would be, you know, ringing up retailers trying to sell off a one-page catalog. And then I'd be back at work. And then I'd be in the gym training to get ready for racing. And Saturdays, I'd show up at a retail store when you're not supposed to show up. It was the only time I had on the way to a race meet in, say, Gympie, and trying to sell to a local retailer in Gympie. It took me 2 years to get that account unearthed. And yeah, and it was just like build the brand. There was no strategy. There was no why. There was no like, oh, we're gonna sit in this market. It was just I just had a passion for being a part of something and had no clue what I was doing. But just having fun with it and making product that we wanted to wear. And we weren't racing, but we were in the gym, we were hanging out.
Do you think for you it was the community component?
I think a big part of it was because a lot of the friends, I had a lot of pro athletes as friends and I sponsored a lot of pro athletes growing up. You know, from that kind of 2007, 2008, we ended up sponsoring some of the best athletes in Australia. And I just ended up having this really good relationship with professional athletes. And we have an amazing group of athletes today in what we do. And I think it's those learnings from those times that shaped us because it's all about a great relationship. And 2010, we were in working from my mum's bedroom. We had 3 20-foot shipping containers and we moved out of there into our first little office in Christensen Road, which we still have today. And
what year was that?
That was 2010.
Yeah.
So it's 13 years ago. And I was like, shit, yeah, like, you know, and I actually quit my apprenticeship then. So yeah. I was a tradesman by then, just made it as a tradesman. And then that was it. Never going back. I've still got my nail bag. I should bring it out.
So before we go into more of the details of LKI, when you were doing Loose Kid, you were doing pop-up stores at events.
Back then.
Basically to athletes. And then maybe word would get around town and people were starting to wear your stuff. And you say maybe the community aspect was really interesting. Did you find joy out of seeing people wear your stuff?
And it was actually quite like, I was like, oh wow, they like the brand. This is crazy. Like I didn't, you know, for me, it was like, oh cool. They like what we're doing. That's rad. They, you know, and athletes would come up and want to buy the brand and And then we would, you know, and next minute I'm signing Matt Moss, who is number one in Australia because he liked the product and, you know, and then I would travel with athletes and, you know, put stickers on their helmets and put, you know, a towel on the podium and, yeah. And I think I did. I liked being a part of it. I mean, if I go back, like my 21st birthday, because we were, I think I was 19, you know, I was quite young. I was 19 maybe when we really started to give the brand a crack in 2007. And my 21st birthday, like I think I had a ministry of sound DJ and I had like 130 or 150 different athletes come to my, you know, my mum's place back then and we had property and I just
was your mum chuffed?
She loved it, you know, yeah. Had a lot of fun. And you know, we and it was just all these athletes getting together. So my 21st was like, you know, Ministry of Sound was a big thing back then.
Yeah, I remember,
And it was like if we, you know, we'd all have fun and you know, but we were all athletes trying to, you know, make it in our career. So yeah, I think that community aspect have always been with us since I was a kid.
Yeah.
But not realizing what that meant until I'd kind of got into my personal development journey and, you know, we went through a lot of struggles with LKI where it wasn't doing well for a good 5 years, to be honest.
So 2007, you made the pivot to LKI.
Yep.
And then that's when you had the shipping containers and you were staying with your mom was this where you were getting contracts through retailers? Is that how you're predominantly moving the product?
Yeah. So we would sell off, like I've still got the catalogs today, which is really special in the first t-shirts in our office.
Really?
But I would, yeah, cool. Essentially like I wasn't a designer, so I didn't know how to design. So I had to find people to help. Like I had my strengths and I had my weakness. I knew my weaknesses as well. And I would take a one page catalog that I had someone designed because we didn't have any team members then.
Yeah.
And I'd get, you know, freelance done up and I'd go on the road and I would literally physically be cold calling in front of motorbike retailers, surf stores. You know, we ended up getting into City Beach at around 2011 then.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a major retailer, which was huge.
That's
for
huge,
us then.
Man. I remember seeing LKI in City Beach.
Yeah. So that was massive. Yeah. And I just, you know, in those times, like I actually remember when I first got in there, I actually got stood up by the buyer. You know, there's the men's buyer and he didn't show up. And I'm standing there going, oh, far out. Fuck, all right. Like, he just didn't show up, want to meet me. And I was like, all right, well, I'll just, instead of trying to call them and meet them, I'll just keep posting catalogs every season. Like, I'll find a way to get in there.
Yeah. Well, that's an important lesson, right? Because I think, you know, we are constantly meeting kids and people starting apparel brands. And their only strategy really is launch a Shopify store. But what you're saying is you put in the real elbow grease. You were at the events. You were sending out catalogs, cold calling retailers and saying, get me in there, I'll send you a catalog.
Yeah.
At what point did things start to stick doing that kind of old school sales tactic?
Well, I didn't really know that it was old school even then. Like, it was
just what you wanted to do.
It was the Shopify, I don't even think it started then. And, and, you know, Instagram wasn't around. Facebook hadn't started really. So for me, it was like you grow in wholesale. That was the thing. And if you had an e-com business, it was like, what platform do you use? We used to be on Magento and you know, made a lot of mistakes on that.
Simon was telling me about it as well.
We've had our fair share there. And it was probably one of the best, a good part of my learnings back in 2015. But I mean, I don't really know. It was just go. Like, it was like, I want this to be a job. I don't want to be a chippy. I want to run this brand and I want to go to work. Like, I want this to be my job. It was never this market can be this big and we're going to make this much money and this is our product. We're going to, you know, like, there was no strategy. It was like, I just want this to be my job. I love it. I didn't know why I loved it.
Yeah.
And I was obsessed with fitness. I was obsessed with racing.
You just committed and married the idea.
Yeah.
Like, this is like, happening. I'm going to force it.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to make sure it works.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll do whatever it takes. And made a lot of mistakes on the way. And I don't, when I look back on it, I'm like, it was never a no, it was just a when. Like, that was my always like kind of motto back then was, and even now it's like, you know, if you really want to achieve something, if it's a no now, it's just it's not a no, it's a when, and we're obviously doing something wrong and why it's
Where do you think that comes from? Do you think like at what point did you start doing personal development? Because we talked a lot about this previously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that when you were 19 or later on?
No, I didn't really do much personal development until I probably hit 30,
really?
You know, 6 years ago. So I wasn't really interested in personal development.
Yeah.
Do you know, my parents, my mum worked really hard. We had a nursery. My grandparents are from, from Italy, my nonna and nonno, my nonno's from Italy, and they worked really hard. So I think, you know, and they'd been very successful in what they'd achieved. So maybe there was a bit of, you know, and I was working in my mum's nursery, plant nursery, and I was selling at the local markets.
Okay.
You know, like, she used to sell at the markets at, what's it called? Where Simon actually started, you know, Culture Kings, which is kind of cool. We had a market there in Cleveland and I would go and help and sell.
And what's happening at that market, bro? It's creating these.
Well, yeah, she was selling, you know, we had a plant retailers. Nursery and we'd be selling local plant, like our plants from there. And we'd go to local, you know, this place, Nursery Traders, where as a wholesaler. So I would help before school. I'd be working for...
So you kind of grew up around
I grew up around a working culture.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably where it came from. And we didn't have a lot growing up.
Yeah.
You know, I never even owned a shirt from... Everyone would own a shirt from, say, like a surf store or like City Beach. I never even owned a shirt from there because we couldn't afford it.
Yeah, so, I remember free dress day in high school?
Yeah.
You had to be like, I got to get the best drip. I got to get a Billabong shirt or a Human or a New York shirt.
Yeah. And if I'm honest, I had to borrow a friend's Fox tee because my mum couldn't... My parents split up when I was quite young and I was 13. Yeah. So I couldn't afford one. So I actually borrowed one. So I've always just been brought up around that, like, you know, like you got to work for what you know, if you want something and, you know, for me, it was, I just wanted it to succeed, but it wasn't about like making it the biggest thing ever. I always knew it could be something big. But I'd never, to be honest, I never really did it. It was never about the money.
Okay.
It was about having a career.
Yeah.
I think that's a part of it. I think if you do something just all about money, yeah, you can make a lot of money and you can do well, right? But if you do it with a stronger why, it can be far greater than that.
I agree with that, man. Cause even like when I started the agency, people were like, what's the goal? I'm like, I don't know. I just want to build an agency.
Yeah.
Like, it was the most fun thing in the world to me. And I think, it's almost like you just find something that you love and you enjoy the process. And yeah, so many people, I think, look at entrepreneurship as it's about pursuit of the money, pursuit of the dollar. But I think in your case, it's just you fell in love with something and you wanted to see how far you could take it.
Yeah. And yeah. And it had its fair shares of mistakes, struggles, you know, from that period from 2010 to when I really went full time to 2017, 2018, before we changed the brand, it was just a lot of good learnings.
Okay.
And still today I'm learning a lot, but like a lot of mistakes, a lot of learnings, doing too many products for everybody. You know, and when I mean that, it was, we made life jackets, motocross gloves, we made, you know, some sportswear, we made some street, we were selling to a lot of different channels.
Which, and that's when you were LKI. Yep. So LKI kind of took off, you were getting into retail, people were, hosting your stuff and you were in motocross stores, you were in City Beach.
Yep.
At what point did you start to maybe line extend too hard, you know, and line extension, for those that don't know what that means, it's like you're doing too many things and they're kind of diluting the impact of the brand potentially.
Yeah. So I think I started to realize when I think I hit 30 and was like, and my wife fell pregnant and I'm like, okay, like I'm in the real world now.
Yeah.
And you know, every year I was like, this brand's going to, it's going to get better next year. And when I mean that, it was like, we were kind of stuck on about $3 million a year for 5 years.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like, in the end, you're like, okay, I'm doing something wrong here. Like,
and you weren't seeing growth. You
wanted,
just
and you wanted to grow because that's what keeps, you know, you keep growing the team, you keep, you know, building new products. And so I was like, okay, I'm doing something wrong here. This is not working. Like something, it's, I'm doing something wrong. And that's what I really, that's when I actually, I went to a course called Landmark Forum in 2015.
Dude, Landmark.
Yeah.
Yes.
Love and, that place. Yeah, it's brutal, but it's awesome.
Yeah. It is. It's life changing. And we our team does the Landmark as well. And it's a very powerful, full on.
I got to take these guys along.
Yeah.
Everyone's been hearing about it. Like, what's Landmark? I'm like, wait.
It's life changing. Yeah. And
what year did you go to Landmark?
I went 2015.
Okay.
So it was, and then that was kind of the start of my kind of, I suppose, if you say personal development journey. And I wasn't really interested in it, if that makes sense.
Did someone invite you to the event?
Yeah, someone invited me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually went because my mom and I were kind of arguing in the business a little bit around like wanting different systems. And then somebody actually said to me, someone in our business that was kind of chasing our debtors, Amanda, she was amazing. She said to me, because we obviously wholesale account.
Yeah.
So we would wait to get paid by the retailers.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd have to, sometimes they didn't pay for 60 to 90 days, wow, which was very hard.
It's stressful too, because you're like, I got to get the next order in for the next client.
Yeah. And a lot of good learnings there, but it was tough. And she just recommended for me, said you should go to this course. She said I did it when my son was 12, and my son's 21, and I have an amazing relationship with him.
Wow.
And that course really helped me. And I was like, you know what? Fuck, sign me up. Like, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I was like, sign me up. And day one was tough, but day two, I was like, wow, I'm loving this.
Hmm.
And then that was kind of the start. I then joined a Toastmasters club to learn kind of how to public speak.
Wow.
Because I couldn't get up and share. And yeah, everyone gets nervous before they start to, you know, whether they're going to share, and even today, but that really taught me a lot. And then I ended up just somehow, like over time, I found a mentor. And when I say a mentor, a lot of my kind of people I kind of would look up to or talk to were kind of from the building industry. So I ended up meeting the founder of Penny Skateboards, who built the plastic skateboard company. He grew up in Logan where I was from.
I grew up riding pennies.
Yeah,
no
yeah.
Way, man. Cool. So where's he from?
He's from Logan as well. Okay, yeah. So, and I it took me about, I don't know, 9 months to get a coffee with him, 6 to 9 months. And he finally caught up with me. And I just learned a lot from Ben. He was an absolute legend. And that's where I started to learn about brand, and that was about 2016. And then I just slowly, so it sounds like everything happened really fast.
Yeah.
But you're from 2015 to kind of 2017. It's a few years, right?
Yeah. Cause the brand had been around for a while. And like you said, you were doing, you know, 3 million in a year, but maybe you were hitting a plateau.
Yeah.
Was the idea in your head like, okay, I'm doing something wrong. What was the immediate reaction to seek consult or to seek answers? Like what was happening?
Once I kind of, I suppose I would say I wasn't really humble. Like I was like, no, it's going to get better next year. We've got to go harder. But I wasn't really thinking of the why, the strategy, where do we play in as a brand? Like who are we?
Yeah.
It was just kind of spread it everywhere and design everything, and everything we thought was cool with design, where it was like, hang on, is that us? Like you have your distinct kind of look as a brand.
Yeah.
Who you are.
And at that time, was it based around like the extreme sport, like the X Games kind of energy? Because that was big at that time.
Yes and no. I mean, we loved sportswear and we loved street. And we would do a bit of that, but then we would go off and do all these other things that we thought would just get us sales for the wrong reasons.
Okay.
So we kind of had a bunch of everything, but not really distinctly focused on one kind of look as a brand.
So you weren't really focused on branding per se. It was more, let's get attention, let's get out in the market, let's retail, let's produce products.
Yeah. And we did a lot of like stuff to get PR and different things to try and build awareness for the brand. Like, I mean, you know, in the early day, it was 2017. And because we were still in that phase of trying to figure it out, we put a blob on the side of an 80-foot super yacht. So it's like there's actually a video on it, but
can we pull that up
if you want? I think it's like LKI blob party. Never thought we'd use this, and now we are. But we put a blob on this super yacht on the Gold Coast, and you jump off one end and bounce off the other. And we were just doing it to create this crazy content.
Okay.
And get viral views, but there was really no why behind it.
Right.
So we would make these videos and do these crazy events and parties, but it really wasn't us. Like we love fitness and inspire. There was no inspiration to inspire someone, you know, if that makes
right.
sense.
Right. So this is a piece of content you were producing. What year was this?
2017.
Okay.
Oh, we have to watch the whole thing.
We don't have to. We'll skip through it.
It's crazy watching it from then.
So where was this filmed?
This was on the Gold Coast.
So doing a partnership with Monster.
Well, they came along. So okay. That was our blob. You know, we would host these events. Like there was a skydiver that jumped out and we ended up live on the Today Show with that because the skydiver was meant to land on the blob. And, you know, we just got a lot of this media attention all the time, but there was no like why behind it. So it was like, okay, we know how to get media attention. Like there was all these things we learned in marketing that, you know, which I've kind of funny never shared on a podcast, but we learn about all these things around marketing by testing and trying, which was really good because we got to make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah. And like you said, it's learnings. You were just trying stuff.
Yeah. And just giving everything a crack. I mean, we even rode a couch down a hill. You know, like we went, you know, and Kirby actually shot the content, you know, and it was like, it was LKI couch racer or something like that. So I can't remember, LKI couch racer or, you know, there it is. Not that one. Okay. That was with like, you know, no, this the is, one below it, the one below it.
We'll go back.
If you go to the one below it. So that's actually me and another friend of mine and Kirby actually shot it. So we just do all this crazy stuff. Like, and we kind of had, as you can see,
just being a loose kid.
Yeah, you know, and
wait, how do you steer that thing?
With your feet. So we just did like this, you know, and it had no brakes, so you couldn't stop. And we would go like, I don't know, 60, 70 Ks an hour, maybe. And we just created content and, you know.
This looks incredibly dangerous.
It is.
We do not encourage anyone to do this at home.
and that was kind of the stuff that like we were doing with the brand, but there was this, but we loved fitness and I don't think we were doing it and we get views, but really was there a real why behind it?
Yeah.
And I think that's where in kind of when I started my book journey, I was kind of in this real low. I was like, man, this is not working. And you know, I need to learn, like, what am I doing wrong? I probably wasn't the greatest leader, you know, within terms of I'd lost team members and, you know, I wasn't that good at the office, in terms of the way I treated feedback and things like that I just went through. And then that's when these books came to play, like, you know, when it was Good to Great, the founder of Lululemon, I really resonated with Chip's story of what he went through within a brand, his brand previously. And he'd done Landmark and I was like, wow, like I can relate to this.
I didn't know he did Landmark.
Yeah. So I just related to it all and was like, hang on, like what can we be, you know, what can we be known for? And we're really passionate about being the best at women's leggings. And then that's where we created, like, we want to be a functional fitness brand with a streetwear aesthetic. And
because
really
I was going to ask you that, because it seems like quite a quantum leap from what I'm seeing with LKI downhilling on couches and blob parties and skydiving and like kind of this maybe like extreme sports / suburban apparel brands. Like, what point did you go, we're pivoting into this now aesthetic that you have now? Was it a jump from LKI to what you're doing now? Was it a slow transition?
It was a slow transition. But when we did make the shift, and when I mean we made the shift to LSKD, what was really interesting is instead of it being my decision, as you saw on some of that product, there was LSKD and LKI. So we almost had two brands again. So I'm like, oh my gosh, like I'm confusing the community again.
So you had an alternative logo at that point?
So if you see there, there was two logos. Yeah. So we actually had our LSKD logo and then we had LKI under it.
Okay.
So we actually had, we were kind of starting to confuse the community again.
Right.
So that's when I actually went to our team and we were about a team of 12 and I said, which logo do you like the most? LKI or LSKD? And then I went to our community and our athletes and I said, which logo do you like? Which one would you prefer as a brand? And everyone picked LSKD. And Dylan, our head of design, actually developed the LSKD logo back in 2016. So yeah, it actually had happened a while ago. And I was like, you know what? Like, what do you guys think if we just change the brand? And they loved it. They're like, let's do it. And it was the most surreal moment because they all fell in love with the idea. So it wasn't just my decision. It was a team decision.
The community again, kind of.
Yeah, but in our own team, right?
Yeah.
And then a part of that with, you know, all the learnings, I was like, why do we come to work? Like, what, why? And I was asking and we were just, and we had this phrase then called Chase the Vibe. And I was like, well, if our mission could be to inspire people to chase the vibe, could we go to work for that every day? And that's where it kind of had sport, fitness, and adventure. And we create, you know, sportswear with a street aesthetic. And we worked on this one pair of women's leggings for 18 months. And that was like the core of our, core of our business. And it, everyone was like, yeah, let's do it. And I think that was really empowering because it wasn't just my decision. I really got feedback from the team and got buy-in instead of it just being my decision. And then I said to them like, okay, let's change the brand. September 2018, we didn't throw a party like you'd see. We were like, let's just change the brand. By doing that, we changed the logo. We didn't even have lskd.com because it was too expensive. So we went .co. There was no strategy. We were like, let's just go .co. We have .com now.
Yeah.
And when we did it, we were like, let's not throw a party. Let's just change everything. We still had LKI tags. Like we, you know, but there was, you know, it was just like, let's get the logo changed and let's start really slowly branding. And part of that journey, and this is part of the, probably the big learnings is like, some of the biggest retailers in Australia turned us down and started canceling our orders because they didn't like the shift. And a lot of people kind of thought we were crazy doing it because it was like, you've had this for so long and now you flip the whole thing on its head.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Because
I got a 7-month-old and, you know, I mean, it's like, is this going to work or not? But I was like, you know what? If we truly believe in this and we did it, it's not, it's let's take our time. Like it's let's take our time and build it with a why. Let's really protect the brand. And the whole team and Dylan and our team is obsessed with brand and as well. And, you know, he's our head of design and today and doing phenomenal. And we were like, let's just really protect it. Let's not do what, you know, every wholesale account wants us to make because they got sell through that year and wanted it again. Let's do what our community wants. So we kind of just flipped it on its head and said, like, let's do it with a why behind it instead of doing it what everybody else, like all the, you know, essentially retailers want from you. Because then you go into this downward spiral of just making what sold every year instead of thinking of what the community or the athlete wants.
So you're thinking with a higher purpose rather than thinking about, okay, here's a retailer account.
That can make us money.
That can make us a lot of money immediately. I mean, a lot of people, and I meet a lot of people in that position, and they're terrified to make the maneuver that they feel they want to make at the short-term loss of what they might immediately lose. But the interesting thing with the maneuver you made was, yeah, maybe you had a short-term loss, but you built something so much greater and it's a trade-off almost.
Well, yeah, and we didn't expect it to be kind of where it is at today, this, you know, essentially, like if I'm honest, like it's grown a lot quicker than we expected. And and I'm glad I had those kind of 10, 15 years to of those learnings for where we're at today, or I wouldn't have been able to handle where we're at today. But I think when we, you know, when we made that decision, it was just a, it wasn't like we were prepared to decline, if you know what I mean. Like we were prepared to go back in revenue. We were prepared. I was like, you know what? And to be honest, I was in that much of a low. There were weeks where a couple of times where we didn't have enough cash flow to even pay myself my salary out of, you know, and but we could just pay the team because we were waiting to be paid by retailers. So I was in this point where, man, I don't want to live this. I don't want to live this. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, this is not fun. Like, you know, I want to build something and enjoy the journey as well. Like, I want to have a part of enjoy the journey, have fun, be yourself. It was like, I actually want to have fun on this journey too, where I was taking it so seriously that I almost wasn't having fun because I wanted it so bad. Where when I stripped it back, don't get me wrong, we're super competitive and we're just getting started. But like, it was it's this mindset shift where it's like, let's do it with a purpose. And it's harder to, you know, you almost, it's harder because you've got to do, almost try to do less because that becomes more.
Right. So you're saying like, almost like if I'm just thinking about it, you're running your business, you're not paying yourself, you're not finding joy in it. And then rather than like trying to go, how do I make this thing work and stressing about it, you kind of zoomed out a little bit and said, well, why are we doing this in the first place? And then started connecting a bit more emotionally to the greater purpose.
And I actually went through these motions in my journey of going, do I know what I'm doing? Do I know how to do this? Like, do I, like, just more to really ask, to confront the brutal facts and be like, and because I was like, well, why do I do it? And I was like, I love being a part of something. I love the community aspect. I love creating things, but I didn't do it with a purpose from the start. It was just go, go, go. Cause I was a teenager. Like, it was just go. So I knew I had the drive of like, I've got the drive. I'm like, I can give anything a crack. I'm not scared to give it a crack. But if we did it with a strong why and on board, and the team really believed in it too, and really supported them on their journey, which is where we kind of started the book journey and personal development, then we could create something really special and we could all come to work with a common language. Do you know, so that it was you could say soul searching, or just really asking deeply why, because I think that really helped us to get clear. And then once we were clear, we were like, okay, let's go. And then, but not realizing we would, you know, kind of get to where we're at today. And, you know, I really truly believe, you know, we have a crazy BHAG and more from Abound, because I'm really want to develop our team and their futures and, you know, thinking future CEOs and where they can go. It really excites me to create a global brand from Logan.
So it was
crazy, but very lucky to live it, you know,
putting, like, Logan on the map, man.
Exactly,
big time, you know? So Landmark, you started developing yourself, reading books, and then when you, sorry, what was the guy his name who ran Penny?
Ben.
Okay, so Ben, like, what was Ben able to give you at that point when you were trying to figure out the next maneuver?
I think just having someone to talk to that had owned a brand.
Okay.
That was a founder.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of founders go through, you know, it is a lonely journey, I think, for most founders, if that, you know, and they would, could probably, you know, it is a bit of a lonely journey, because you're like, am I doing it right? What am I doing? And you really try to find those people around you that are there to give you that direct feedback and help you. And it's, to be honest, he was a legend. We just became friends, and he loved skateboarding and action sports. And yeah, it was cool. Like, I, and whatever, it kind of was, you know, like, if the thing I learned was, is I was like, he's got his own things going on, but if I can spend time with him and he's free, I'll go spend time with him.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, now it's harder as you get busier.
Yeah.
Now, but if you're, I think the, my learnings is, if you want to learn from someone, you need to find any way to spend time with them. Even, you know, like, to the point I was helping him concrete his boat ramp, right? So I could spend time with him to learn. Like, yeah. I just wanted to learn, like, because I was like, the only way I'm going to get better is by spending time with people that have really achieved this and find things, or that, and not to, just to find those gold nuggets of, like, of learnings from other people that have been through those tough times, or they've grown really fast and they're like, don't make that mistake. And I'm like, oh, okay, thanks. Like, if we ever get there, maybe I'll know that, you know, at that time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like books do. So yeah, he just played a big part in the journey. He was a legend.
How did you get his attention? Like, you said you were trying to reach out to him for months.
I just met him through a friend of mine, Nathan. Okay. It was his brother-in-law, and he CC'd me in an email, and then I kind of just kept emailing him, and he said he was busy. He was probably fishing. It's like, I want to catch up with this weird founder, you know, but it kind of, we ended up catching up.
Yeah. Yeah. And then building a friendship, and then obviously.
Yeah. I haven't spoken to him for a while, but like, up until like kind of 2019, we spoke a lot.
Yeah.
And then things just got really busy. Like,
yeah.
To be honest, cause we launched our Reptite in July, 2019. So it took us about 18 months. We launched that product. And that really was kind of the tipping point of where it really started. The feedback started coming from, you know, the community, and that really started to grow. And then obviously we had a, you know, kind of really successful Black Friday, and we're like, okay, wow, we need to hire a warehouse manager, and we really need to start knuckling down. Like, we've got something special here.
Yeah.
And then obviously the following year COVID hit, and, you know, we just kind of kept reinvesting back into the brand, back into the team, back into personal development, product development.
So would you say like a lot of that initial e-com success was based on that first product?
Yep.
Yeah.
That and some other products. Yeah.
Okay.
That, but that was the main one.
I mean, if you walk me through the product development, I mean, loosely without giving too much away. Cause you know, I meet a lot of people and they're like, oh, I'm starting an e-com brand. I found the supplier and they're sending me the product, slapping my logo on it. I'm going to sell it. You're saying you actually went out and created a new product. essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I took my first trip actually to China in 2011.
Yeah.
So it was a long time ago, and I was really lucky to learn that, you know, and relationships and, you know, production and product development. And yeah, it takes time, you know. I think when you, because, you know, when you're starting out, you can't get the minimum quantities that some of the suppliers need. Because, you know, getting and finding the right machines, because these machines are the things that have, you know, whether it's a smaller needle or, you know, have the right fabrics so, you know, so things don't pull apart, et cetera. Like, there's so much in it. So it just takes time and making kind of lots of mistakes.
Yeah.
But I mean, when I look back on our product journey, like the early days, we were talking about Gildan, like we were using local t-shirts because we didn't know where to go to really kind of create more technical product.
Yeah.
But it can take, I mean, we've been developing product. Like, we're launching this, you know, women's and men's underwear this year.
Oh,
you know?
I'm excited about that, man. Cool.
I'm so pumped. And it's been 2-3 years, you know, essentially close to 3 years to find the right supplier, spend time with them, the fabric, the fit, test. So it's been a journey for this one product. Some products, you know, 12, 18, up to 3 years development to come out.
Yeah.
And I think for us, it's about trying to, you know, we want to really get it right for the community. So, you know, not only is it going to last them a long time, creates hopefully great word of mouth, but it takes time. Product development takes time.
So the shift between LKI being, I guess, I don't know, when I looked at the branding, it did feel like more of that kind of motocross scene.
Yeah.
And then the LSKD has this really clean, minimal aesthetic. The community voted, they're like, we like this logo more. Did it organically shift into the community you have now? Because the community you have now is quite different to where it kind of originated.
Yeah, and I think yes and no.
Yeah.
We've had a ton of new community join our brand.
Yeah.
But what's been really inspiring is the community that was wearing LKI, I've noticed, have come on that journey.
Okay, they haven't
with
left. Us.
Yeah, like we have a community group with 70,000 in Facebook, and they're like posting stuff for the old LKI products, and it's so cool to watch. So there's a community that has really come on board and loved the shift in the journey. And I noticed a lot of athletes in motocross, you know, have got into other sport. You know, they finish racing moto. They, you know, they either get into running marathons or, you know, they're getting into functional fitness or they're getting into other training.
Athletes will just keep doing athletic things, right?
Yeah, you got to stay fit. And I think, you know, racing motocross is a tough sport. Like you know, broke a lot of bones, surgeries. You know, you're in the gym training, trying to recover if you have an injury. You know, you got 40 bikes going into one turn. There's a lot of adrenaline going. So you kind of, you know, I think, yeah, now I kind of do, you know, I've just finished the Gold Coast Marathon. You had a goal to go sub-3 and I was stoked to get it.
Yeah, but I saw that, man. It looks brutal.
Yeah, it was fun. And a 6 month of training for it. And it was about the journey of training for it, not so much about the event. But it's that, I suppose, that like what I've noticed, what Chris was saying is a lot of athletes in motocross kind of were looking for that, I think, next, that kind of, not adrenaline, but that kind of fix.
Yeah.
So that's kind of naturally evolved into different, you know, within to fitness.
Yeah.
And we still sponsor athletes. I mean, we have a pro BMXer, you know, Logan Martin, who's won X Games, the Olympics. And he wears our product when he's in the gym. You know, he doesn't wear it when he's competing. He wears it when he's training in the gym, when he's with his family. You know, and that's what we have, you know, he's a part of our team in that.
Yeah.
He's an amazing athlete and very inspiring.
So it kind of organically happened in you guys. And I guess like if someone's trying to look at the marketplace, you guys weren't looking at what's going to make the cash, where's the biggest, you know, paycheck. You were looking at, hey, what does that community love and how do we better serve them? And do you feel like the brand's evolved by being very community centric and trying to serve them versus looking for the next paycheck?
Yeah. And we really focused on functional fitness.
Yeah.
Communities. Yeah. That's where we really honed in. You know, I actually, you know, I grew up racing motocross with the founder of Fitstop. They have about 130 locations in Australia now and doing amazing, Pete. And, you know, we grew up together. So we were like around that. So we kind of, you know, and that's functional fitness and what we would, like I was doing. And we've kind of been on our own journeys together, which has been really cool. So it's kind of he created a community of fitness within functional fitness. And we kind of work really, we have a collection launching with them this week. So,
oh wow,
you know, there's this real tie-in of athletes and moving in and within fitness communities and being a part of something. So that's where we really found ourselves.
And that's where the messaging is starting to come out, like 1% better every day. Like I notice you have these mantras that you're building into your company culture. And that's also not just internal, but you're using that externally as well to kind of align with the brand's why and its purpose.
Yeah. And what's crazy, I mean, I've only been talking, like it's kind of interesting now we've been really honing in on our manifesto. You know, I got these like Believe and Dream tattooed on me back in 2009.
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy to think we've kind of always had this within us of who we were within our values and our mission that we've, you know, we've evolved our mission to inspire people to be 1% better every day, which is really exciting of how it's where we're pushing it to. But it's something that we live and breathe every day. And what's special about that is I didn't create the values. We created as a team.
And
when the brand really evolved, 2018, we changed the brand. We created our mission. End of 2020 is when we created our values.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a stepping stone within the brand. It was felt right. And once we changed it, once we decided to create our values, we did an anonymous form to a team of, we had about 35 then.
Yeah.
And they filled out an anonymous form what their values would mean to the brand.
Okay.
And then we just printed it out and, you know, collated, suppose, the data and started just having a lot of fun with it. And we like, well, would we go to work for that value? Would we make a decision off that value? And it took us about 6 months, and that's how we came down to our 6 core values.
So what kind of questions were you asking the team to have them think about what the values might be?
Well, what's crazy is I kind of gave Keith, our COO, and Jade, our head of CX, they kind of ran it all, to be honest. Okay. So I actually wasn't daily in, I wasn't, which was really special.
This is kind of special, man, because it's so rare that teams will do that stuff with.
Yeah, so they created it, the form, and put it in Slack, and then we just collated all, everything that was said into, I suppose, a spreadsheet, and then popped out the data and just looked at it and just was like, okay, like there was just this formation. And because we'd all been listening to the books, there was this like, you know, sweep the sheds comes from the book Legacy, right? Mm. Like, so there was some things and themes that we all were like, we love this. We really believe in this.
Like, were you guys like reading the same books together?
Yeah.
Okay. So how does that work? Is that the whole company or the C-suite or?
Our whole company, yeah.
Your whole company all read
the
same book.
Yeah.
How does that work, man? That's inspiring.
I mean, we just do. A lot of work. I mean, and you know, we pay for our team's Audible account. And you know, the journey started with a few books and it's evolved to a lot of books, but we have our certain books that we really love to give to our teammates to read, to understand our brand. Mm. And kind of resonated with us. And we really, you know, it took us on a journey and why we do what we do. But yeah, we're very passionate about it. Like, and just that constant learning. I mean, I'll go back to a book, you know, 3, 4, 5. I've done one book 10 times.
Yeah.
And I constantly learn because I'm constantly growing every 6 months.
And you go back to it and it hits different.
Yeah. Massively different.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's been very special and I'm very lucky to be a part of it. And I think when I go back to Sweep the Sheds, right, when we did that, you know, when we were in Christensen Road, I made the conscious effort to remove my office and not have an office.
Okay.
And that was in 2018 after, you know, a couple of one different book. And I was like, you know what? I don't need an office. I'm never even there anyway.
Yeah.
Ripped it out, open plan. And then when Sweep the Sheds was created, we were like, okay, you know, part of that value is like no one has an office. We have meeting rooms, open work plan. I don't have one. I just kind of take team members' desks and hope they can find a desk. You know, because if I need to work somewhere, I'll just take a meeting room or go in the quiet room or work from home, you know, if I need to. So, and then no one gets a car park. It's first in, best dressed, you know. So that was just like, you know, and if I'm late, I'm on the street or on, you know, on the other side of the road on the grass, you know. So, yeah, and there's a lot of times I am after dropping my daughter, you know. So that value relates all the way down to like where we park.
Yeah.
You know, it's that important to us that we have to live and breathe. Because if I change that, then we're not living the values.
Right. So you're like, I need to lead by example. And so does the team and you guys. I mean, it's quite interesting because I meet a lot of like CEOs that talk about having a good workplace culture and rarely do you see it, right? Like one of my favorite quotes from Richard Branson, someone asked him, why is he so successful? And he says to them, what is a company? It's a group of people. That's about it. And they either go home and boast about you or they bitch about you.
Yeah.
And there's like nothing in between, right? Yeah. So I'm with you, man. Like I think culture is so paramount to the success of a company. So like when you went to Landmark and you started reading these books and these materials, at what point were you like, I need to start sharing this with the crew. I need to start, you know, getting them onto this material.
It took time because, you know, I remember coming back from Landmark and going, everyone needs to do this. And they were like, you're weird, man. Like... like they were like, you're weird. Like, no.
Yeah.
You know, because I was-
Is it a cult?
Well, I was a bit of a bat out of hell. Like I was always finding something to, you know, just chop and changing all the time.
Yeah.
So I had to lead by example. And I think in terms of the mistakes I was making and not listening and already always listening and you know, not actually hearing what the team was saying to really support them and things they needed or how I could help. So it took time. And what I realized was like, if I didn't lead by example, they're not going to want to listen to the book.
Yeah.
So, or they're not going to want to do a course. And I think, you know, that was the special thing about it. It just happened authentically. Like I didn't go, oh, the strategy is we do this and this and this, we're going
to
be this.
So you didn't like force it upon the culture to read books and to do this stuff. You just started embodying it yourself. And then maybe people found it magnetic and wanted to emulate it. Or
I mean, I was always like telling people about like this, a book that I've read and be like, hey, check out this book. I'd love your feedback. And they'd read it and give me feedback, and friends as well. And, you know, it's just like, hey, what do you think of this? And, you know, I met my CFO, Matt, in 2018 through, funny enough, Ben Mackay. He was, you know, Matt was working in another business, and he came on a day a week. And he was like, oh, I don't really want to help this weird dude, but this crazy founder, I'll help him. We laugh about it today. But he came on a day a week, and I had a government grant pay for him. And, you know, they gave me 20,000 and it helped pay. Cause we didn't even really have enough money to hire anybody, extra. And he kind of came on a journey. He came on in August and we'd actually changed the brand in September. He had no relation to this. He just joined and he's probably like, what the fuck have I got myself into?
Yeah.
Funny enough, he kind of came on the book journey with me. Like I was like, hey, do you want to listen to this? And like, tell me what you think. I'm trying to figure things out. And, you know, and he just kind of came on the journey.
Wow.
And then we just started to be honest, we were just having conversations about it. It was just fun. Like it wasn't, do you know what I mean? Like it's just like
you're
constantly learning. And I think if you create a learning environment, you learn. Once you learn, you go, shit, I don't know anything. You really know you don't know nothing.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, I've got so much to learn. When am I going to find those times to learn so I can get better?
Yeah. I think you might just have to pick that microphone up just a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Cabe can jump in. We can edit this out.
Did it drop?
Yeah, it's been slowly.
It's like sinking.
It's not your fault. It's been slowly. Yeah, man. I'd love to know what are your top five faves or top 10 or just some of the faves.
Do you want me to do it now? Wait.
That's all right. We can wait. Are we good?
Well, there's a bunch, but I would say Good to Great by Jim Collins, Delivering Happiness, Tribal Leadership. What's another one? I mean, I love the founder of Lululemon. I love the Nike story and just the, like what went on in the early days of the drive, legacy. There's a bunch of, I mean, there's so many now, like there's just so much more once you start on that journey, because I think what I learned is these books, they recommend books.
Do you have one that you go back to?
I go back to Good to Great a lot.
Okay. Yeah.
I go back to that book. I'm actually listening to that again at the moment.
Yeah. I haven't listened to that one yet.
Yeah. It's an amazing book. And, he's got a bunch of different books like Be 2.0, Great by Choice.
Okay.
Jim Collins is amazing. He talks about the hedgehog concept and your flywheel and how you really build like what your economic engine is and what you want to be best in the world at and what are you passionate about. And, you know, that helps you to think a little bit differently. So I love that book. It's quite in depth, but I think I was just right place, right time, ready to listen to it.
Yeah.
When I did start that book. Yeah. But I'm actually listening to that right now. I was on it this morning before.
I'll join you on it, man. I'll give you feedback if you like.
Yeah.
And like one of the points you said there, which really resonates with me is like leading by example. And, you know, like whenever I've done this stuff, like going to a Tony Robbins event or whatever, I'm like, you got to come. And then people are like, yeah, cool. You know, but they start to see this innate shift in you. And I think some people find that curious. And even here at Rival, like we go to a lot of events together. I tell a team like, hey, there's an event after hours, I'll buy your ticket. And people are like, oh, I'll come check it out. You know, and then they go along, they're like, this is great. And then they really want to come to the next one that we go to together. So we put a library out there and people started to just pick books up and start reading themselves. And I think it's so important for a culture, for a company to self-improve. And I think that even just to find joy out of challenging yourself with new things. So what else do you guys do for culture? Because we have the culture up on the screen before, if you want to pull that back up again. But if you could unpack this for me, man, because like enjoy the journey, create a community, sweep the shed. I don't know what sweep the sheds means. So I'd love to know a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
But for you guys, like what's happened because having these as your values?
I mean, look, I'll be clear. Like we're not perfect either, right?
No.
Like I'm not boasting we have the greatest culture either. No. Like we're always constantly improving.
But you're focused on it and you put energy into it.
Yeah. I mean, I want to come to work and have fun too, you know,
as
much as it has, you know, it's we're right in it and stuff. You want to enjoy the journey. I think when I look at our six core values, I mean, you know, enjoy the journey, have fun, be yourself and embrace diversity. I mean, you know, when you're in the thick of it, right? Like you make it's, you know, there's, you know, you're deep in it. There's things going on where you're trying to figure different things out. You got to make sure you can be yourself, right? Mm. You can have fun. Like, I mean, the team love to take the piss out of me a lot, which I like. I think it's fun, you know, like you're always kind
of. It happens here all the time.
Yeah.
You like, it's just our memes in Slack. It's out of control.
And I just think enjoy the journey is like, you know, like, yes, we do events and we do things as a team and we're doing different things. We have the Good Times Club and we do different things together.
But just being present.
But I think there's also the part of being a good human.
Yeah.
You know, create a community. Our community is why we're here, who we work for. Like that's, you know, we're always learning from our community from all different channels. And, you know, whenever we are doing something, we're like, is it helping us create a community with any decisions? You know, like we're opening, we're opening our 8th store this weekend at Carindale and, you know, well, you know, we get a lineup of, 500 plus community.
That's
waiting
crazy, man.
It's so cool. And we're always like, well, how
it's like an Apple store opening.
It's wild. And it's so cool. And it's like, how do we make sure we're creating community here? Like what do we do here to help make a decision? Sweep the sheds. You know, no one is bigger than the team and no one is too big to do the small things. I mean, that value is essentially like,
I get it. So like no one's holier than that job.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Dishes need to get done. Floor needs
jump
to be
in and give them a hand, you know? Yeah. Like it's just, we're all in it together. You know, there's a better way to do it. Find it, innovate, set the standard, do more with less. Like that's, you know, that's a, you know, when you're making decisions every day, whether it's in marketing or product or community, like community experience, whatever it is, like you've got to find that there's always going to be a better way. So it's always this like, when you're in an environment, you're like, can we do it better? Like we did that. Yeah, you have your model of success, but can we do it better? Like just prompts you to ask that. Move fast, break shit. Like that's a fun one. You know, fail forward and dare to think differently and nothing is impossible. I think, you know, that one is fun because we're constantly learning and testing. You know, and I think it's like failure is a good thing because you're so much better from it. And when I mean failure, it's like you make mistakes every day, like small mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, like even down to a teammate, they might make a spelling mistake and they feel like, but it's like, hey, what did you learn from that? Like you're going to be better from that. Like it's the small things and there's parts you can't, you're not physically breaking stuff. You're just actually like, okay, let's just get it done.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you sit on stuff too long and not release it. And I think someone sent me a quote. Someone said something to me, Mark Zuckerberg, when he released the first Facebook app, he didn't even approve it. They just released it. He didn't even like approve it. You know, like that was the whole mantra. It was like, go hard. And when they released the first Facebook app, he didn't even approve it. It just went out.
Wow. Like, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I think,
was that a part of their culture? He's just like, go for it.
Yeah. I think they had like, I think they had something around move fast, break stuff. And then it said at the end, like move fast, think strategically.
Cause I remember seeing a video when he was like, I think he was in his early 20s. And he's walking around his office and there's a bunch of dudes without shirts on drinking beers. And then they had like move fast, break shit on the wall.
Yeah.
You know, you see this clean cut dude now. I'm trying to remember where that came from. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I think they ended up, I could probably Google it, but it was like, they ended up changing it to like move fast, think strategically. You know, they got so big, but you know. And then 1% better every day, you know, embrace change, reflect and grow, leaders are teachers. You know, that one has been a real special one that's resonated with everyone so much. That it's now become a mission for us, our mission and really how are we going to help inspire, you know, people to be 1% better every day through every decision we make, through content, through community, through community experience, through product, through storytelling, just, you know, try and inspire because, you know, we want to be inspired to come to work and we need to create that internally too every day. So yeah, they're very special to us and it's something that, you know, I think for us to keep growing as a brand, we need to keep living, breathing by them. You know, I think that's the most important part.
Do you think like because you've had such a good set of values, are you finding yourself attracting a different crowd to want to come work with you?
We recruit on these values. So we're very passionate about like if a teammate, you know, if you don't resonate to those values, maybe this isn't the place for you.
Yeah.
You know.
So maybe you're trying to unconsciously maybe see if they're this kind of person by nature and.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, if we all resonate with a certain value, you're going to want to come to work to make, you know, be a part of those values. So I think that's a really important part for any business. If you have your core values, you want, if your team resonate with them.
Yeah.
Then it makes it that you have a common language.
Yeah.
So I could say yes, but it's one of those things that it's, you know, you can't force it. So it's, but we want to live and breathe and make decisions, which means our team can move at speed. You know, they can make decisions quick.
Yeah.
you know, because you just, they just need to look at those values if they need to make a decision.
So if someone's looking to do this for themselves, it's just, you know, not trying to be perfect. Like you said, it's just maybe this is the third or fourth iteration of maybe your company's values and you've just worked on them over time and just let it kind of slowly bake itself in. Or?
Well, I mean, I think values take time. I mean, I tried to create a set of values back in 2015 and I failed rightly because the person, I was like, I don't even know what that means. Like I was like, what is a core value?
Yeah.
Is it, you know, friends? Is it like fun? Is it, what is like, I didn't understand the concept.
Yeah.
So I think it's really deeply understanding what the concept means because it's,
gotcha.
It's almost a buzzword. It's just that you make the decision based off it. Like
it's almost like, do you think it's like something that happens and you're like, oh, like that should happen more often. Like,
yeah, I think when everyone has something that they believe in or they think about that they go, oh yeah, I actually do that. Well, shouldn't that be a value? Like as a collective, you're like, well, we actually make a decision. It shouldn't, could be a value.
Yeah.
And I think the values evolve. I mean, you know, we haven't been perfect. We've changed our brand 3 times. but we were really trying to refine who we were.
Yeah.
And it's been that long a journey and our values got refined in 2020. Got, you know, like we started in 2002. And 18 years later, you know, how many years later? 18 years later, they finally got refined.
That's cool, man.
You know, like it didn't, and I was 13 then, but
yeah.
I didn't know what they meant at the start. So I think when you're trying to find your values, it's truly finding why you're doing it and what are you selling? Like what is your brand or business or what is it? And you know, and how do you relate it back to what you do as a team?
Yeah.
Because I think it's more important internally first. It's not, because like you said, it's, yeah, what Richard Branson said is so true. You're a team of people. You're a sports team.
Yeah, I find sometimes like values are really good, especially for new people to kind of get acclimatized to how to behave and what kind of the culture of the workplace. Like we had a value, it's called play the field. So, you know, if you've crushed your task that day and you pop your head up, you're like, man, some people are kind of struggling today. It's like, how can I play support for them?
Yeah,
it's cool. And what this has started to do is people start to feel in the workplace like, oh, people have my back. You know, if I'm struggling or stressed out, people will come over and take work off my plate and help tackle it together with me. And it's really great for new people because they're like, oh, that's how I need to operate in this. It just helps acclimatize new people, I think, a little bit.
Yeah. You need to make sure everyone does it together.
Yeah.
So it becomes this
collective
supporting each other. Mindset. And I think as a brand gets bigger and bigger, it gets harder and harder. So you've really got to make sure you're living that every day.
Have you found that like as your company's grown, how many people do you have now?
We have over 100 full-time and close to 200 with the casual team at the retail stores.
Yeah. How have you found that leap? Because obviously e-commerce is one thing, like running distribution, running a warehouse, that's its own, I guess, mountain of challenges in and of itself.
Yeah.
And then retail is a whole separate beast altogether.
Yeah.
So at what point were you like, okay, we're doing really well in e-commerce. What made you dive into retail? Because a lot of people don't want to do that. A lot of people are terrified of retail.
Yeah, I mean, great question. We built our office and moved in at the start of 2021.
Yeah.
And when we built the office, we obviously had our distribution center where we ship our orders from. We have our, you know, fitness club we train in. And we wanted to put a retail store in there for the community so we could learn. And we're so passionate about fabrics and the fit. We're like, if our community can touch and feel the fabric, we can learn more and get better. Quite quickly, when we opened that in the January last year, it kind of started to grow quite quickly in store and we're like, wow, this is amazing. Like we're learning, we're being a part. Like,
are you in a retail area or is this kind of like a warehouse kind of area?
We're on the side of the highway in Logan. So we're easy entrance from the highway, but we're not in like a shopping district. It's
people going out of their way to go shopping.
Yeah, they go out of the way to come to our HQ. And yeah, we have a coffee shop there and we do host a lot of community events on our rooftop with the gym. And that really sparked us to be like, you know, I've obviously sold to retailers for a very long time with the wholesale side when we had LKI and we did close our wholesale business down.
So you weren't doing wholesale at all with LSKD?
No, not by 2020, no.
Okay, and so that maneuver was basically you were having problems with retailers not wanting maybe some of the stock.
We wanted to, with LKI, LSKD, we really wanted to make sure we do some wholesale internationally, but really trying to partner with where our community's at.
Yeah.
But we wanted to really control the brand message of our why. And so then when we went into retail, we opened our first store. We thought, well, let's start learning. And we, you know, the next minute we're touring centers and learning around shopping centers.
Yeah.
You know, and then we opened Chadston in October last year.
Yeah.
And um, And to be honest, you know, it's like, you know, learning and trying to meet different people and trying to learn from different, you know, from, you know, people that have done amazing in retail and really just trying to learn very quickly. But yeah, we have a great team. I mean, we you know, we've gone from one store to, you know, now we'll have eight by the end of the weekend.
Yeah.
And then we have one more in Melbourne opening up in November.
And one mobile one.
Yeah, so we'll have 10 because we'll have the bus, which is super cool. So
yeah, you're going to tell us the story behind the bus. So apparently there's a bit of nostalgia, a bit of history. And Kabe, our video guy, has some experience with this growing up as well. Yeah. So we're chatting before we got on today and you've essentially renovated a bus. And yeah, take us through what you're doing.
I mean, this bus has been a goal for close to 5 years. So Dylan, our head of design, had an idea to do a bus.
Yeah.
And we wanted to do this bus. And to be honest, it was just the perfect timing because COVID's kind of been out, you know, like kind of ended last year. And we were just in this perfect timing to do this bus. So we went on the hunt for a bus. And Keith, our COO, he's an absolute legend. His dad's building the bus, Jeff, our BAF bus builder. And he's done a great job. It wouldn't happen without them too. And yeah.
It's so, like double decker.
Yeah. I don't know if that's.
Is that it?
No, it's a different one. It's the Love Bus.
The Love Bus. Yeah. Just type in the Love Bus Byron Bay.
And so. Yeah, that's it. Yep.
On the top left?
Yeah, that's our bus.
Okay, so that's a bus you bought.
Yeah, so we went on the hunt. We found it. The guy that owned it is an absolute legend. Top speed of 85 Ks. It's epic. And we wanted to create a community with it. So we stripped it back and at our old office in Christensen Road. We still have it. So we've used that space to build the BAF bus. And it's going on Chase the Vibe tour. So we called it the Biggest Fuck Bus. And it's going on the Chase the Vibe tour. And yeah, we stripped it out. We've turned the bottom down, its bottom level into half kind of a retail store. We've got an exclusive tee that you can, the BAF bus tee that you can only get out of that bus.
Wow.
It's got a hangout area upstairs. It's like a full recovery area, air conditioned for like, you can go up there and, you know, Theraguns and like different recovery stations up there and just hang out. And then Ryan, our, he's running, he's the BAF bus driver. Like he's planned this whole trip and we're just going down the East Coast.
Are you going to be on the whole trip?
I won't, no. No. I'd love to. I had a FOMO watching it. I'll be following it every day. So yeah, it's pretty much next week. It's finished.
So where's the bus going to stop?
It's been over 4 month build this. So
yeah. Yeah. You were showing me some of the photos before us. It looks incredible. We've
painted it black and it
why did you want a retro bus? That's interesting. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's got edge around it. Right. And it's just kind of, fit us and it's got like the bus has history to it. It's a 50-year-old bus. It's got that kind of storytelling around it.
Been doing weddings for 50 years.
Yeah, yeah. I actually literally went to my cousin's wedding and that was the bus they took us in. So it's kind of cool. I'm like, oh, we're looking at that bus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to be honest, like you can train off it. So you can do wall balls off it, battle ropes, and you can use TRX ropes. So you can use it as a workout as well off the side of the bus. And it's literally going to travel up and down to local gyms, events, run clubs, and just create a community.
Okay.
And it's going to be heaps of fun. It's So it's on the road for about 3 months straight and then obviously Christmas and then it's back on the road again.
That's incredible, man.
So it's going to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good question.
The value for us? I mean, it goes back to our values, create a community. You know, I think like
you're not just saying it because it's fun. You're like, we genuinely are building it. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah. And every piece in the bus has a why. Like we really, I only got to see the bus this week, to be honest. I hadn't seen it since it was painted. And it was so cool. And I think to have our community through it, they can get to know our brand a little bit more. Yeah. You know, we can talk about our why, like there's a bunch of storytelling in the bus and, you know, our values, you know, this is all quotes around that stand for us. And to be honest, it's like we can show up in communities and be a part of it with this bus. And, you know, you can go hang out in this bus at different events and, you know, and it ties back to, you know, functional fitness and, you know, athletes need to recover. You can hang out there. And yeah, the why is actually not to try and sell product out of the bus. Our core products will be in there. And we've got an exclusive, like, you know, BAF bus, Chase the Vibe to a T. But it's really about just creating a community and having really authentic conversations with the bus. So it's going to be in Queensland for a couple of weeks and then it hits the road down south, down to Sydney.
I got to get my Bat Bus tee. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I'm in, man.
I'll let you know where it is. We have a little tour dates and yeah.
How can I track where the bus is? Is it going to be on the website?
It will be on the website. Yeah. We haven't figured out whether we could put a tracker on it, to be honest.
Yeah, Ryan, that's a cool idea.
But yeah, there's like a full tour stop.
You just end up with like groupies like following the bus the whole way. Like,
that would be pretty cool. That would be cool.
Doing workouts every day with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Really cool, man. And I guess like when it comes to your why, like, where are you setting your sights now? Like, how are you finding joy in this, expanding into retail, doing more stores? I know you guys are looking at bringing in some more stores in next year. Like, what's keeping you fired up and excited about it?
I think, when I say enjoy the journey, I think it's a real process about what we're doing.
Yeah.
And I do really enjoy the process. You know, like stuff that we're working on is 2, 3, 4 years in advance.
Yeah.
So I do really enjoy that, the building side of things. I love really wondering of how we're going to step by step build this out and watching it grow, you know, and creating those communities through functional fitness. We have huge goals, but I genuinely love fitness. Like, I'm obsessed. So for me as well, I love setting goals. And, you know, within fitness, I want to do a half Ironman and a Ironman. I'm going to do the Noosa Tri at the end of the year. And I think, you know, that ties in. Like, I live and breathe those mission and values every day. So yeah. For me, that's what keeps me going. And, you know, I've obviously got my amazing wife and two young kids as well that, you know, hopefully I can inspire them. I just genuinely love the process and I love what I do. It's definitely full on and there's lots to learn and you're on. You're like a pro athlete and you're just on and you've got to be on and you've got to have your downtime, but you're on, right? I'm excited to where the brand can really go globally. I think that's what's exciting. And I think building a global brand out of Logan really excites me because we can create global careers from Logan and really cool. build this from where we are in Australia. And I think that's cool. You know, I really do. I think, you know, could we do this and really put, you know, our hometown on the map, Logan, but also Australia on the map and create and really integrate with global communities.
Yeah.
We've got our US office now in San Diego in Pacific Beach and we're really building the brand there. And that's just the start. There's a lot to think about, but it's really staying focused. And I kind of love that, like, because you're constantly, you don't want to slow down. You keep moving forward, right? Mm. Like, because it's how you keep getting better.
Yeah.
You can't stop. So there's lots of it. I mean, there's so much, but it's exciting.
What were some of the challenges, if anything, when you went into retail? Because obviously e-commerce, there's a certain consumer experience, you know, you got to make sure things look good and the photography is nice, but then retail, you got lighting, you've got space and you got to like be clever with a tight space. You've got the counter, the traffic coming in and out and the positioning of where the counter is. Like, what were the lessons there in retail that you started to learn quickly in that experience?
When we opened our first store, we've been thinking about, we use that as a learning testing ground to understand. And then our second one, you know, is kind of helped us. It's kind of, that's kind of a pop-up. Like, it's not, that isn't a long-term lease.
Yeah.
So that almost, as crazy it sounds, almost helped us to learn. And we, you know, I would say we made mistakes, but you wouldn't know about it because we wanted to keep improving. And they're both amazing stores, but we've kept tweaking them. And then we've actually repainted two of our stores.
Okay.
So like, we had a certain color. And then since we've opened our third store, we've actually gone back and painted the other two stores.
Okay.
From the learnings and said, actually, we need to paint them white. So
what was the reason for changing the paint? What was it originally?
It really made our product pop.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really made our product pop. So we just spent time, like, to be honest, like spent time in stores and really found what was our brand aesthetic of, you know, who were we, like, functional fitness, and try to really create something that aligned to us.
Yeah.
You get inspiration, but it was like, who are we? Like, who, you know, what, and working with the team on that and our designer and, you know, you're constantly tweaking as well and how you localize within the communities where your stores are. That's probably one example that, we went back and painted our other two stores because of that journey of learning that we had this kind of gray.
Yeah.
And we're like, let's just go white.
Yeah. It just has a different feeling. And
yeah, it just helps our product, you know.
And then, like you said, localizing is so important in retail because I worked in retail for a long time and different places have different culture and different geography. Have you felt like there's been learnings there as well, like maybe where the stores perform better than others, what you have to be conscious of?
Yeah, for sure. And I think we're known in certain locations than others.
Okay.
So it's allowed us to really focus on how we're going to localize into those communities more to build the brand. Because yes, we're growing in e-commerce, but when you start really localizing in with retail, you might not be, you know, you may not be as known in a certain area. So it's kind of exciting because of the opportunity for our brand.
Yeah,
you know, nationally, and then obviously what we're doing in New Zealand as well.
Okay, and are you picking areas that you're not as known in and opening stores there?
I would say a bit of both.
Okay, testing both, and yeah, you're finding it has as good results either way, or
Well, it's a great question. I mean, yes and no.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's one of, well, yeah. There's so much. There's so many different attributes to it.
Yeah,
to think about.
And would you say like have you gone back to e-commerce from the lessons from retail and kind of cross-pollinated ideas?
I think the best thing about it is it's made us better in e-commerce.
Really?
I think so, because it's made you better within. And when I kind of, you know, to share one example would be, we were going to remove our swing tags. So we hadn't planned to go into retail really until we opened our HQ store. So we were going to remove our swing tags, you know, yeah, because it's online. You probably don't need them.
Yeah.
But then once we move into retail, we were like, hang on a minute, we need to give education to our community on our swing tags. Right. We need to actually improve them and make them better for our community to get education of the why behind this product.
Yeah.
So we've been on this journey to really improve them. It'll take about a year and a half for that to happen. So it's a process. So we were going that way, and then we're like, hang on a minute, within retail, we need to improve it for our community.
Yeah.
So we can give them education on why we developed this and why this fabric is this. And
right.
So that's just kind of examples that, you know, we've had to do or learn from that.
So you're just learning you have to do maybe a bit more education in retail?
For sure. I mean, product education is really important.
And then you're realizing maybe people don't know this if they're ordering online. So let's...
Well, you could, because you got a new product description.
Yeah.
You know, you have it on your product, you'll have it on a product description, where in store it's... you're not looking at it online. So yeah, there's like, where is the product? And you have our team in store supporting the community, but yeah, that education is just as important.
And then having someone there to speak to them is probably powerful for the brand too. Cause if you walk into a store and you get a great person behind the counter,
you build that relationship.
Build a relationship, and then you get to learn about the brand off that person.
Yeah,
and then
exactly,
you have an idea in your head as to you know, why the brand's great. And do you think that looking at retail and e-com, like products that sell, is there a difference there as well? What sells digitally versus what sells physically? Or is it about the same?
Yeah, it's about the same.
Yeah. 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 And then has there been any other lessons from retail that you've implemented into the e-commerce store?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So we're working on like where you can like stock in store. So you can check. I suppose this is more of an implementation into our e-commerce store that... from retail, where our community can check if we have it in store, if it's not online. And then the next stage will be ship from store.
Yeah.
So if there's something we might be out of stock of online, we can ship it from store to the community member so they can get it online. So creating that like true omni-channel.
Yeah.
So we have like, they can check stock levels now.
Yeah.
If a store's near them, but the next stage of that is ship from store.
Wow, man. And then now you guys are going to the US and into New Zealand.
Yeah, so I mean, we've been growing in the NZ community for a while now. So we definitely have plans to open over there, and then also in the US with we've got our it's our office / HQ, sorry, HQ / retail store. I said both at once, but
yeah.
So that's been exciting. I mean, we have a team of four over there at the moment, and really building the brand, like just building the community. A couple are here right now.
Yeah.
You know, over here at the moment, working with the team. So to learn and keep traveling back and forth to, you know, understand our brand and then going back over as well. So it's exciting. I mean, I go over probably every 3 to 4 months to work with the team. So.
Yeah. And the team's obviously grown over there. And have you found the difference in the market in New Zealand versus Australia and the US?
I think what I've learned in the US is, you could say it's like very literal in terms of product descriptions, where sometimes Australia is we're a little bit loose.
Yeah.
And to put examples, like what does the product perform? This is a bit funny, but we made mistakes where we were like, it's red like tomato sauce, you know, in e-com, you have fun with it, right? Like this color's red. And they're like, what is it? Is it actually tomato sauce? And you're like, oh no, sorry. Like we just made some mistakes. So we're just like constantly improving, right? And that's the best thing is like our team really helps us over there to localize with the US community.
Yeah.
And it, To example, it's like it's leggings in the US and tights in Australia.
Oh yeah, simple language differences.
Things like that, right?
Yeah, even like slang, like when we were working with Culture Kings and Simon Beard, we noticed that even the language in the US market versus the Australian market was so different. You know, they were using at that time the word drip, but we weren't using that word at all.
Yes.
You know, we were using the word lit. So then we were like trying to figure out, you know, the differences in the language and the nuances. So
yeah, it is. And it's understanding that nuance to localize.
Yeah. And what's happening now with the athletes? Because I know we were having a great conversation about kind of like Nike and how they became prominent, and you can read about it in Shoe Dog. And like, you know, Matt Purcell, our friend Matt, was talking about how Nike's strategy is they essentially maintain their relevancy in the marketplace by, you know, partnering up with athletes that are up and coming and doing incredible things. They're credible because they're, you know, able to manufacture these incredible shoes, and then they're memorable just with their marketing campaigns and all the rest of it. Like, what lessons have you absorbed from, you know, people like Phil Knight or what happened with Lululemon and all the rest of that? What are you constantly trying to implement with the athletic side of the brands?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think those brands aside that are super inspiring, I think my personal history was before even understanding those brands was I worked with athletes.
Yeah, and you were one, yeah.
Yeah, and I was lucky enough to have a lot of sponsors racing motocross. Didn't make it to be a professional, definitely didn't get to there, but I was lucky, you know, made it to state pro and had a lot of sponsors. So I learned spending time with athletes and working with athletes and how inspiring they were in the early days of my career, in my early, I was a teenager in early 20s. So my personal journey with athletes has been really to, you know, how do we find athletes that align to our mission and values, and how do we help elevate and storytell them, you know, through our different series, whether it's Set the Standard or, you know, the 1% Better series, through, you know, a lot of our different athletes, and really work with them to share their stories and find athletes that love communities and what they do. So I think, you know, the journey, what those brands do are really inspiring. But I think just from how we work with athletes has been a real understanding of what we did growing up and getting to work with athletes through LKI. And the cool thing is a lot of those athletes that used to be sponsored by LKI days, they still wear LSKD today, which is really cool. They've evolved with the brand, even if they're not, you know, if they're retired as an athlete. That's something that we, you know, consciously we're so focused on how we can storytell an athlete and their journey and you know, whoever that athlete is and kind of share who they are. That's something we're really working on. And then how it ties back to whether it's, you know, 1% better every day or to them with our values.
Yeah.
We're going things about it a little bit differently with what we do as a brand. But we're very passionate about athletes. And I mean, I think we like to treat ourselves like we're all the everyday athlete, you know.
Yeah.
So we kind of put ourselves in the athlete's shoes. And I have so much respect for athletes and what they do. I'm a huge fan. I mean, we have one of our teammates, who she is an athlete as well, Brie Masters. She got third at the Commonwealth Games in 100-meter relay.
She's incredible, man. She smashed it.
Yeah. And she's in our team looking after PR. So, you know, doing 3 days a week. And she just gets back from the Worlds and she's back in the office tomorrow. So she's a pro athlete and she's also working within our
team. That's cool. Yeah.
Doing PR.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really cool because we really want to help athletes in their journeys and thinking about their careers post, you know, when they're a pro athlete as well.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, is a testament of how much we're really inspired by athletes as well.
Yeah. And that's one thing that's really obvious with what you're saying, man. Like even the language you're using, it's like you genuinely care about others and you care about their stories. And I think, you know, oftentimes, you know, I've seen brands that look at influencers just as a means to an end or athletes as a means to an end, but you're like, I want to invest in them and I want to see them do well and I want to share their story. It's a genuine community where it's not just take, but you're really trying to give stuff outwardly as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. We're definitely passionate about that. I mean, we have a collection coming out with Georgie Stevenson, at the end of this month. It'll be our second collection. And, we started working with her. She's a very influential female, very inspiring, into fitness, has a business, you know, podcast, super inspiring. And we started working with her in July, 2019. And 3 years later, we did our first collection. So it's all about that long-term relationship.
Yeah.
You know, we were only talking the other day, like it's, you know, been over 4 years now.
Wow.
We've been working together. So it's that long-term thinking as well.
Yeah. Yep. And do you guys get offers for like collabs? Are people always trying to collab with you guys because you're this up and coming brand? They're trying to partner up in some way.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, all the time. And depending, I mean, we love working with local brands in terms of potentially if we can work things out to sort that, you know, if the values align and what we do. And it doesn't mean to be a product either. It's just how can we support each other? As brands. I mean, we have a collab coming out with Blenders Eyewear this month, which is really exciting.
Cool,
man. An American eyewear brand. So that's really exciting. We got two styles of eyewear, one for training and one for street. So it kind of ties back. So that's super exciting. That comes out in a few weeks' time.
Yeah. What kind of glasses are you guys doing?
So we're doing two styles with them.
Yeah.
I actually been wearing a pair at the moment.
Oh, yeah, give us a look, man.
Yeah. So they're fresh.
Sorry, mate.
So yeah, so and that's been working.
They were fresh.
We've been working, yeah.
Oh yeah, you were wearing these when you, dude, these are fly, man.
So we've been working on that for about 12 months with them. And they come out this year and we made them a sweater because they're coming into winter in the US and we did a pair of eyewear and they're a phenomenal brand and we have similar athletes and
I don't know if they're me, man.
No, yeah. Okay. We get you the running ones, the training ones. Yeah,
these are cool.
They look fresh in there.
I like the shape too, man. They're really cool.
Yeah, so they're kind of like a unisex style, and then we have another style coming with them.
And that's their logo on the side?
Yes.
Yeah.
So they've done an amazing job in the US, and they're based out of San Diego as well.
Yeah.
So we're doing stuff like that as well. But it's making sure there's that values alignment if we do things like that.
Yeah.
And we won't make eyewear. Like, that's not our place. But
you'll collab and you'll do something.
It kind of worked really well. Yeah. I did some triathlons in the Sunnies already in May this year testing them. So, like, I wear them, training as well. The other pair, not these ones. But, so that stuff is kind of happening. But those, you can't force them. They kind of have to come to life with authenticity.
Would you say you kind of navigate things by feeling and gut check oftentimes in LSKD and what decisions you make? Like, how often are you like checking in on your gut and like, does this feel like a good move?
Both, I think, like values for values alignment and does it feel right and to the brand, does the connection, if you're doing a collab of the brands, really feel authentic and you can really, it'll blend well together and thinking long-term too. Cause you don't I don't think you do a collab to like make money.
No.
I think you do a collab to build brand and help each other build brand and really try and storytell the why behind it.
Yeah.
I think that's a big part of a collab.
Yeah. And earlier you were saying like one of the biggest maneuvers you made into LSKD was to protect the brands, right? And you were saying how, retailers weren't necessarily happy with it, but that was something you learned early on was like, I got to protect the brand. I have to invest in the brand equity. I have to build our reputation. What was that at the beginning versus what it is now? And how do you find yourselves navigating that and making sure you guys stick to it?
I think we're a lot more, to be honest, more refined now, which is really cool because as that journey was going, when we shifted to LSKD in 2018, we were still in that tweaking stage of like really finding and defining who we were. We knew the product, we knew all that, but we were really defining it. So I think now we're even more refined on who we are and we know who we are and who we're not. Which is really exciting.
Just become clearer over time.
And I think constantly discerning that and understanding that of the why and having those conversations with the team because things evolve too. Like the world, the things are moving at speed around the world, but also don't get distracted by that. It's easy to get distracted, but I think we're more refined as a brand than we've ever been. And especially I think going into retail helped that.
Yeah.
Because when you walk into a store, you have to have your distinct logo and you have to have those little areas that give you that distinct look as a brand and have that consistency, which we were talking about before. So that's something that's really helped us to deeply think about as we've opened stores to make sure we have that consistency.
Yeah. Yep. And then I know you guys have been experimenting with content as well, like obviously sharing a lot of these values, sharing the why, storytelling for different athletes and all the rest of it. Because when you're juggling retail, logistics, shipment, international expansions, hiring, scaling a team, hiring retail stuff, how do you find ways to kind of balance everything out? Or are you really relying on your team at this point? Have they kind of come along and helped you create structure behind this? And like, how do you stay excited? Like, how do you maintain your energy levels to keep focusing on the next battle?
I mean, we have a great team. I'm very, very thankful. And I spend a lot of time with the team. I spend a lot of time in the office. If I'm not traveling or with the family or training, I'm at the office.
Yeah.
But we have a great team that's really passionate and it always goes back to the why and, which our mission and values. And that's where a lot of our content comes from. Like this, our Set the Standard series, Matt Kirby, our head of content, and the team, like they'll go out and create these storytelling pieces and they'll show us as a group when it's pretty much finished. And I haven't seen it or I get inspired because it all goes back to a why.
Yeah. So is that this here? what you're talking about?
Yeah. So there's different Set the Standard series that we're creating and rolling out with different athletes, and it really storytells, you know, whether it's from a professional athlete or someone, or an athlete that, that has it, that's not doing it for a full-time job, essentially. It's, we have both. So
really highlighting people that are enjoying their journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And really showing how they set the standard within their sport and
I
how
see.
We can inspire. So, yeah. And then we're building out LSKD TV, which is over time. We know that that's something we really want to build out, but it's going to take time. So that kind of ties back to LSKD TV within our blog and just really sharing those stories. And it's just a long-term thinking. We think long-term for that.
Yeah.
When we're doing these storytelling pieces.
So when you're talking about the TV thing, are you talking about like short form series of like documentaries that you're going to be building about athletes, or are you talking about something on television?
Down
to
the point, I mean, we've done things with, if you go to Ellis, if you scroll up, there's Don't Wait. So we did, Matt and Elliot worked on a storytelling piece called Don't Wait for men's mental health. And I'm trying to figure out.
Maybe we'll type it in.
It might be, no, Don't Wait, LSKD. Yeah, there it is.
Oh, LSKD.
So
TV.
It's a 20-minute video documentary. We had four athletes talk about their mental health, men's mental health journey.
Oh, I
and
see.
We hosted an event. You know, we had a facilitator there at our office. It's a really inspiring video of what they went through with their struggles being a professional athlete with their mental health. Highly recommend watching it. I kind of get goosebumps just thinking about it now. Like, it's a very inspiring video clip, and what those guys did sharing their stories is really inspiring, what they went through. And then we hosted an event at our HQ one night on a Monday night where we had a facilitator, and there was about 100. It was a very low key community event that was like team, athletes, family, friends, and community could come, but we kept it really tight, and we had a facilitator put on an event and really help us to create conversations of how to open up. When we struggle to have those conversations, and this is what, four professional athletes shared their why and their story. So we do a lot of those things, and we don't even really do it to, it's not about selling product. It's really about, how can we inspire and how can we create movements?
It's an important message, because I the athletes I know, just hearing some of the stuff they've gone through or things that were said to them, and it's a high pressure environment where they're quite a lot is expected of them and they have to sacrifice quite a lot. So
yeah,
capturing that and talking about it, it's a powerful message. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is a phenomenal story and what they went through. And it was an amazing night, to be honest. And what Matt and Elliot created. So we do a lot of stuff, like there's long form and there's short form. And to be honest, that project, that took over 6 months.
Yeah.
So, and it was kind of happening in the interim of everything else.
Yeah.
So we didn't go, we had a release date. It was ready for a month before we even did it, because we were so focused on how we delivered it for this event that we could have this tight community to relaunch it. And then we launched it on YouTube and just things like that we're always trying to do that have a stronger meaning than just, our product. We want to be best in the world and we want to create the best fabrics, but we also want to inspire at the same time. It all ties in together. So that's a super cool video. That one only happened about a month ago. So they're things that we do, whether it's short form or long form content.
Yeah, it's powerful, and it's, and branding is so emotional too. Like, if you look at why people love Nike or why people love Harley Davidson, it's there's so much storytelling there. And I think stories build communities, and some of the pivotal moments in my life have been from stories I've heard from others, and you heard stories from Ben, I'm sure, from Penny. And I think it's so awesome to see someone like yourself giving back to the community and trying to give back to others as well, man. It's really cool.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah. I appreciate it.
And dude, thanks so much for being here. I know you're busy as all hell. You've traveled in the world, you got a lot going on. if anyone wanted to connect with you and the team, where could they go and how could they reach out to you guys?
Our brand social is at LSKD, and then we have our HQ at LSKD.HQ on Instagram. My personal is just JasonDaniel__. Couldn't get the actual, just the Jason.
I might be able
Daniel.
To help with that. Yeah.
There you go. You can hook me up. You can check us out there. We have a bunch of different
links.
We have a bunch of different channels for our retail stores as well, and our US channel as well.
Yeah, you got a big heart, man. You got a lot of passion. Your crew are incredible. Whenever I've met anyone from your team, they've been very lovely. And I'm really grateful for your time, and thanks so much for sharing your story with me, man.
Appreciate it.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks, dude. Awesome.
Killed it, man.